Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So I know we've been talking a lot about Milan in recent weeks, but we cannot not pay tribute to Zlatan and that great win in the derby. So our first guest today, which you'll hear in a little bit, is our friend Daniele Mazzanti from based in Milano, so we'll get some perspective on that. We are going to name our winners and losers from another excellent weekend in Serie A. We, of course, have a special part of the podcast just for our patrons. And you guys know that on the podcast, we take pride on trying to cover as many different teams as possible. I've been wanting to talk about Hellas Verona on the podcast for a while, and we finally found a great guest to do it. New friend of the podcast, Richard Hoff, that'll be available to all at the end of the pod. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I know you love Zlatan. We've talked a lot about him on the podcast over the years. But I want to ask you this, like, this is really pretty amazing. He battles COVID, comes back, scores two goals in the derby to win the derby for Milan after previously playing for Inter at the age of 39. So, Alex, what do you make of this? Does this increase the way you perceive him? Do you think this is a nice cherry at the end of his legacy? What do you make about all this?
I think it's just fantastic that he's still playing like this. He's still this important. We talked, obviously, we've now mentioned this a lot, but when he did go to Milan, the number one thing we were saying is, well, just being there, his presence just being there might make everyone else better. And I actually asked Asmir Begovic, who was really kind of coming along with him, hey, was that one of the goals? And he was like, yeah, just for younger players to see how older players like us go about things, that should just rub off and be a great positive impact. But for Zlatan to still really be like the best player? I mean, man, it does continue his legacy, David. And I think more people should focus on it when, I'm not saying people aren't talking about him enough or anything like that, but when someone down the line on their own podcast or when someone has that great conversation of like debating greats, right? I think this moment with Zlatan at Milan needs to really be focused on because we talk about all these greats in all sports. Like Shaquille O'Neal's always the one I come back to where he might be, and you have to really harp on the word dominant, not best, but dominant. He might be the most dominant player I've ever seen in a sport when Shaq was in his prime. You give him the ball down low, it's going in or he's getting fouled. And if he could make free throws, it's game over. But still, there was that just absolute 10-year span, I'm ballparking here, where Shaquille O'Neal was so dominant. But David, then he had kind of what I like to say, his extended farewell tour, where he went with a lot of teams. And he was no longer that Shaq. Still always will be Shaq to us and a great player, but he did show those weaknesses, you could say, that age got to him. Where is Zlatan showing that, really? I mean, he's really not. And it's not like he's over still in the MLS, banging that league. No. He's back in a top five league, at one of the best clubs of all time, being one of their most important players, if not the most important player. I mean, Donnarumma, sure, but it's remarkable, David. It really is. And I mean, when you have a character like this, you can't be totally surprised because he's just not the same as everyone else. Like, what I really respect about Zlatan is, yeah, I guess if you don't like him, you could say he's obnoxious or he's really self-centered or he's all about himself. By the way, you talk to people who have been teammates of him, they don't say that. They just would kind of put him in the same bracket of like a Mourinho where he just expects and demands excellence. That's what he does in everything in life. And he'll even tell you about that himself, probably in the third person. So I just think it's so good for the sport. And once again, I think it's so good for his legacy because he's always going to be a legend in the game. But to be able to even say, oh, he didn't even show that many holes when he was 39. That's fantastic. And I come back to the fact that his personality, I mean, David, he has this game. He goes on Twitter. He finds a picture of two bloody lions and he tweets fame. Like, we need this guy in the sport as long as possible. I just think he's so good for the sport. But really, besides all the jokes, I have to come back to what I said that him and Azmir were coming to Milan for. He still carries himself. We can say, oh, he's all about himself. He's Mr. Hollywood. He's his own cartoon, et cetera, et cetera. But he goes about things so damn seriously. His dedication to the game. I mean, that's a huge takeaway I have in general here. Zlatan, body-wise, how he goes about training and just everything. Everybody will tell you, in training, if you were on his team that lost, you want to run away. I mean, he's that type of a player. Like, he demands excellence around the clock. And does that line up with any other greats that are still playing at this age? It does. Ronaldo, a few years younger, but as disciplined as can be. Hates to lose probably more than he likes to win. Tom Brady, older than Zlatan, same thing. Disciplined beyond belief. LeBron James, disciplined beyond belief. Are we seeing a theme? Zlatan really should be right up there with those guys. Honestly, he's just changed teams that when you change teams so many times, sometimes you don't get that respect, but in a way, David, you can spin it and say it's almost more impressive. Wherever he goes, he's just freaking Zlatan. So I think it only does great things for his legacy. I think it's so good for the game. And really, Milan are so lucky because players should now be seeing inside that dressing room. My God, I'm 25 and I feel lazy today. Well, look at this guy. Look at this guy. So yeah, that's my answer on Zlatan specifically. But David, overall, what did you make of the derby? And honestly, did this match make you even more concerned? I know it's early, but did it make you even more concerned for Inter's title hopes? Or did it make you more, maybe on the positive side, more optimistic that Milan might even be able to challenge for the Scudetto?
So, by the way, I love that comparison Zlatan-Shaq, because on my morning walk before we were recording, I was trying to think of a parallel to the NBA for Zlatan, because, you know, he's not Jordan or LeBron in the conversation for the best ever, but he's definitely made a huge impact. I love the Shaq analogy. I was thinking Kevin Garnett, but I think the Shaq one is even better. So well played there. Yeah, as far as the derby goes, first off, great, great win by Milan. Milan fans obviously should be very happy. It was they had a soft schedule to start the season, but they were able to win without Romagnoli and Zlatan missing time. They get back to the derby. They get both players back. Now, Romagnoli struggled a little bit, but granted, he's facing the best attacking duo in Serie A. So Zlatan, of course, dominated the game. I think if you're a Milan fan, one thing that really stands out to me is that it'll be very, very hard for Tonali to break into the starting lineup. And I'm not saying this as a criticism of the acquisition, quite the opposite. I think it was a great acquisition. And I think the fact that it won't be easy for Tonali to break into the starting lineup is really the best exhibit that I can give you that Milan has really improved this year. Since the pandemic, since we came back with Calcio, Milan have been the best team in Serie A. Has a lot to do with their midfield. I know we talked a lot about Zlatan at the top. I thought Frank Kessie was absolutely amazing in this derby. Really a strong physical presence. Played really well, especially at the end when Milan were defending their lead. So, you know, and I know you're going to hear from a few people. Our friend Daniele Mazzanti is going to give his take on, you know, what's the ceiling on Milan. Is it possible that this Milan is somewhat reminiscent of Conte's first Juve? Maybe, because that's the parallel, because Milan haven't been in the Champions League. It's been 7-8 years now. It's very rare, in my opinion, for a team to go from not being in the Champions League that long to like being a serious title contender. But we did see Juve do it. Are there some parallels between those two teams? Yeah, I would definitely say so. But for me, the big difference is how much stronger Serie A is compared to back then, because Milan was on the decline. Allegri was still there, but they were coming down. It was really the end of the great Milan. Inter had paid the price for overextending themselves after the treble. There wasn't the Atalanta that we have now. So to me, that landscape is different, but Milan, there are some similarities. So the reason I wouldn't say as of now that I can see Milan as a Scudetto contender has a lot to do with the depth of the league. As far as Inter, I think there are some reason for concern. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. It's four matches. I do think it is fair to say that more should have been expected because they were finished the season so well in the Europa League. I know they lost in the final, but they had momentum going into the season. They made a lot of changes to the defense. Granted, Bastoni's injury, we saw how much that means. So do I feel a little bit worse about picking Inter for the Scudetto? Slightly, but it's still early. I think this is going to be a fascinating race, which, speaking of which, Alex, I'd like to get your take on this because you picked Juve at the beginning of this season to win the Scudetto. This is our fourth season covering Serie A together on the podcast. I think it's fair to say this is the year that Juve has less of a stronghold on the league. And I always think, you know, when we were doing percentages, I think in the past, Juve was probably a higher percentage than all of the rest of Serie A combined. So over 50% favorite on their own. But now when we look at this landscape, Alex, we have Inter who are still very strong. We have Napoli who look great as long as they can play games. They look great. We have Atalanta, who I know lost to Napoli, but are still a team definitely to be reckoned with. And maybe this Milan being a wild card. So when you look at the field, Alex, is it safe to say that since we started the podcast, this is maybe the less likely Juve is to win the title? And by how much, in your opinion, if that's the case?
Yeah, you're right. I think we've always had it at over 50% at this point for Juve. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to make it 50%. I don't know really where my numbers should lie, but the same way we say when David Amoyal does a transfer rumor Raider column and he says something is really probable, but he rates it at like 45 or 50%, which some readers will be like, what? That's really probable. You just have to know obviously how you rate things. I'm kind of doing the reverse. And it's like, if I say 50% for Juve, that means I'm concerned. That means I'm concerned because really what's even letting me give them 50% is the fact that they are Juve, and I'll really steal your whole status quo line until that changes. I'll just kind of believe that it will stay the same. And obviously it's not so simplistic. I do look at their team and I obviously think they have the talent to win it. I do. But yeah, David, in a way I feel like you can be outlining the last handful of years for Juve. And I'm not saying there haven't been great moments that haven't felt like hanging on by a thread. There have been great moments where maybe you could even argue they were getting better, but you can still kind of look at it, whether you look at points or not, saying these last few years, doesn't it feel a bit like they're just trying to hold on to the Scudetto rather? I mean, I know they're still trying to win the Champions League and grow and not regress, but you got to feel that maybe even they are thinking, can we hold on this year? And when you're talking about holding on, you do diminish your chances of winning. It should be about win. And I'm not saying this is what they're thinking, but this is what I feel. It feels like more that they're thinking about, can we hold on to this one this year? Because it is their title, just like in wrestling. You have a belt, right? Someone needs to take it away from you. So they have that belt. They've had it for a long time. And maybe at this point, it's almost more about protecting that belt. We know their main goal is to win the Champions League. But just on the Scudetto, perhaps they're smelling the blood on themselves. And I think, David, more importantly, teams around them are. When you have a result like that, that Juve had at the weekend, I mean, listen, it can be one thing. It can be a standalone. It can be an abnormality. But what it does do, David, is it lets the rest of the league know, ooh, they're ripe. Let's go at them. And we know this, and this has been this way for a long time. And this is where I can always parallel Juventus to my New England Patriots, who have been dominant for even longer than Juve, is when bad teams or mid-table teams play Juve, it is their Champions League final. It is their Super Bowl in the NFL for the Patriots. Yeah. So I just don't think it's going to get much easier for Juve. But the one thing they do have on their side is talent. And hopefully that talent really meshing together quicker than maybe some fear it will. So percentage-wise, me, I'm going to say 50% as of right now that Juve win the Scudetto and the field would get the rest. And I could be moving that very, very soon. We'll see. But as of right now, I still do want to kind of hold on to your whole status quo line and still give them 50. But like I said, 50 for me at this point, that means I'm getting a little bit nervous on that one. So yeah, that's my take on it, David. So I kind of hinted at Juve's poor result there, but that just segues us into the larger conversation, the larger segment of winners and losers, David. So let's always be on the glass half full side first. Let's start with our winners. Who do we have?
Well, first off, big shout out to our Oracle 1000 Names. I know sometimes I tell you guys to take his predictions with a grain of salt, but this time I'm hoping there's someone that listens that bet all of 1000's picks, because you would have made some money. Went 3 for 3, called Juve drawing against Crotone, Napoli beating Atalanta, and Milan winning the derby, I guess, were maybe in some ways less of a surprises, but kudos to our Oracle. We talked about Zlatan at the top. Obviously, he's the big winner of the weekend. We mentioned Frank Kessie. He's another winner. Leao had another strong performance. Very important for Milan to really get him going, considering how much they invested in him. But he's playing well with Zlatan, which is great. Juve at Crotone wasn't a great game by any means, but I have to say Morata has been looking pretty good for them, and they've really needed him now with Ronaldo with COVID and Dybala still not fully fit. So Morata came through. We also want to give a shout out to Crotone striker Messias, who looked quite good in that game. Then we had Napoli's big win against Atalanta. I'm going to nominate Chucky Lozano for the Galliani Award for This Player Feels Like a New Addition Award. Lozano was almost a non-factor last season. There were rumors he might be sold in the summer. Thank God Napoli kept him. He's been playing really, really well. Then we had Osimhen scored, continues to make a big impact up front. Bakayoko with a very solid game starting for Napoli in the midfield. And big shout out to Gattuso, who absolutely crushed Gasperini in this game. While it was a rough one for Atalanta, we want to highlight that Lammers had another goal off the bench. Kind of he's taken that Muriel role as a volume scorer off the bench. So keep an eye on him, especially you guys who play fantasy calcio. Then we want to give a big shout out to Ranieri and Sampdoria's big win against Lazio 3-0. It's Ranieri's birthday today. He's done a great job at Sampdoria. So tanti auguri, mister. Well done. Also been pretty impressed with left back on Sampdoria, Augello. We know that's one of the positions that's probably the weakest in the league, but one to watch. He replaced Murru in the starting lineup, who was sold to Torino. And then Quagliarella had a goal in this match. For those of you in the U.S., you were rewarded if you got up early to watch Sassuolo on Sunday. My team, 3 wins, 12 goals so far this season. Fantastic. They win the derby of the Emilia-Romagna against Bologna. They were down 2 goals. Great game by Sassuolo. Berardi has been sensational in the post-lockdown, has 8 goals and 6 assists. Kudos to him. Kudos to De Zerbi. Love my Sassuolo. And then we had Cagliari winning on the road against Torino. Simeone with his 3rd goal. Sottil, an intriguing player on the wing. He arrived from Fiorentina. And I want to give a shout out to midfielder Nandez, who I think is absolutely a player to watch. He could start for a lot of really good teams in Serie A and abroad, a little similar to Barella type player. So keep an eye on Nandez. Been a big fan for him for a while. Then we had Udinese defeating Parma. Important game for them. It's never too early to make points in the race to avoid relegation. 2 of their players that arrived from Watford, the other club owned by the Pozzo, coming through. Pereira, man of the match, and Pussetto with the game winner. Then we had Roma defeating Benevento. Zeko with a brace. Pedro off to a great start. Tied the game, procured a penalty, and Mkhitaryan with 2 assists. Then we want to give a shout out to Spezia manager Italiano, former Padova player, organized the team well against Fiorentina. They come back 2 goals for a draw. And then yesterday, interview we recorded before our Verona guest, Genoa, who despite being ravaged by COVID, I mean, talk about a team that's been really ravaged by the virus. It's them, away game, they show up, get a point, very valuable in the race to avoid relegation. at the Bentegaldi, which is where their manager Maran really made a name for himself in Serie A at Chievo. So those are our winners, Alex.
Well, congrats to them. Congrats to them. And now let's just go to the losers, David.
All right. So we have to start with Kolarov. As great as Ibra was in the derby, Kolarov's been an absolute disaster at center back. Eriksen looked pretty lost. Conte, he's really become Conte's whipping boy. At this point, it almost feels like the lock of the century that Eriksen will be sold in January. And if I was the right team, I would absolutely be all over that one. Atalanta, just as we had talked to Mark Doyle on Friday and pondered, does it even matter if Atalanta's defense stinks because they'll score so many goals? Turns out, yeah, it does matter. Romero was an absolute disaster on defense. He was supposed to be the player to elevate it. Again, don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but not off to a great start. Speaking of bad defense, Lazio gives up 3 goals to Sampdoria. Hurt, who returned to the club after playing in the Premier League a few seasons, really struggled. Lazio tried to improve their depth, but they were forced to play Parolo, who's in his mid-30s. He's closer to my age than yours, Alex, I think, playing on the wings. That did not work out well. Then Juve. What I will say is that there really is a fine line between boldness and arrogance. And I think Pirlo's really dancing around it. It's probably not his fault because, you know, obviously we perceive Pirlo, a lot of our perception of Pirlo is based on him as a player. But starting 5 players under 23, which Juve hadn't done in forever, you know, I get that there's players that aren't fully fit. It was after the international break. But I think Pirlo is going to have to really watch because I think a lot of people are really going to look at this fine line between boldness and arrogance. It probably would have been easier to go with a more standard lineup. I kind of respect the courage, but the results so far have been a little bit uneven. And we're recording this before Juve's Champions League game. Then final 3 losers, we have Torino lose at home to Cagliari. They are dead last, no points. Gianpaolo in trouble. There's already buzz of maybe Ventura going back to Torino. And then we had Fiorentina squandered a 2-2 draw against Spezia. Caceres with a stinker of a game on defense. There's already buzz on Sarri potentially replacing Iachini. I don't think anyone's surprised that Iachini is not doing well this season. I would love to see Sarri at Fiorentina, but this will be a very interesting situation because I doubt Sarri is going to give discounts to Juve for what they owe him for this season. So a situation to watch, but I would love to see Sarri at Fiorentina. To me, that would be a best team for him right now. And then lastly, Parma, who have now lost 3 losses in 4 matches. I know they made a lot of additions at the end of the transfer window, but mainly young players. And I'm just not sure in the race to avoid relegation if that approach is going to work. I respect Parma's president for trying, put in a lot of effort. He's certainly showing he wants to be present, but I'm not sure all this injection of youth is going to help turn the team around. So those are our losers. And let's celebrate a little bit more Milan's win in the derby. So I went to our dear friend Daniele Mazzanti to get his reaction on the derby. Well, we had to pay tribute to Milan's very impressive win in the derby. It's been a long time coming. Milan sitting at the top of the standings. I know we've talked a lot about them recently, but we had to keep it going after this impressive win. And I'm thrilled to be joined for his 3rd appearance on Calcioland, our friend Daniele Mazzanti. I really wanted him to come on because he is in Milano right now. I want to talk a little bit about how the vibe is on the derby, and also he's been a Milan fan forever, so he can give us some perspective historically. So Daniele, it's always a real pleasure to speak to you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you very much, David. It's a honor and a pleasure for me, and thank you for having me in this beautiful day after the 89 win. So
absolutely. Yeah, when I asked you before we started recording how you were doing, I had a feeling it was very well after that win. But let me ask you, because, you know, obviously this was a statement win from Milan. It was different from derbies in the past, not only with San Siro being essentially empty, but everything going on with COVID in Italy. So just tell us a little bit how the vibe of this derby felt in Milano before, after, during. How different was this in years past? And how different do you think it would have been under regular circumstances for Milan to win this game?
Well, it was a strange derby for us here in Milan, because one of the best part of being AC Milan fan, but also being Inter fan, is the derby. Is the week before, is the game itself, is the day after. Of course, if you are an AC Milan fan, last seasons were not so good for us, talking about the days after the game. But this year, the vibes were very different, because we have other troubles, other things that we, of course, have to think about it. And in this particular period of the year, the derby was sort of a minor thing, talking about what the derby was and have been in the history in the last years. I am a season ticket holder of AC Milan, and I used to be for the last 20 years. So I never meet a derby in the stadium. And the derby when the AC Milan is away is my favorite game in the year, because you are in your stadium, but you are with a minority of your fellow in a stadium full of your opponents. So it's like a few against a crowd that cheers against you. And it's my favorite game in the whole season. So being stuck in front of my TV, it was a pity. But I'm pretty sure that if this game would have been played with fans and crowds, etc., probably the result won't be the same, because the first thing is that AC Milan is performing very well without fans in the stadium.
Yeah, for sure.
And the second one is that the atmosphere in the stadium is a thing, talking about derby. And I'm pretty sure that Inter would have come back in that game, because their fans are really loud and really strong. So probably for us, talking about football, it's better to have a derby without fans at the stadium, to have a derby without fans at the stadium. But it's a pity, because it's the best game you can attend. I think that I suggest to you and to your fans all around the world, if you have to come to Italy to watch a game, please try to go to a Milan derby, because it's unique. Because the atmosphere in San Siro is unique. It's a fantastic thing. We have a lot of derbies here in Italy, and the difference from other countries in Europe is that we have basically the same stadium for two teams, except for Turin, except for Torino, but we have the same stadium. I attended the Genoa derby. Genoa derby is beautiful, but over there you have a city that is that there's a difference zone by zone. Like there are zones where you can find only fans from Genoa, and zone where you can find fans only from Doria fans. In Rome, the derby is marvelous, but it's a bit of a war. It's a bit dangerous over there.
Yeah, for sure.
And there you can find family that are only Romaniste or only Laziale. Here in Milan is unique because sort of miscellaneous, because you can find family where the parents are Inter fans and the sons, the children are AC Milan fans or vice versa. So it's unique because everything is melted. And of course, there are Juventinis too, because Juventinis are everywhere. But the vibes, you can feel in this, you can feel it in the streets before the game. My best games ever in the stadium are Champions League derbies back to the 2003 when we won without winning. And because we draw both matches, but we scored an away goal and we reached the final in the Champions League of 2003. So they are the best and the worst game ever for an AC Milan or an Inter fan. So it's a pity for this year, but we couldn't do in a different way. So I'm happy that AC Milan won, but I hope to see the next derby in my place at the stadium.
Absolutely. No, and very well said. I love the description of the other derbies. You know, obviously you're based in Milano, but I always got the vibe that, you know, there is kind of a mutual respect. They refer to each other as cugini. It's definitely not the intensity in some other places. So very well said. But there is a lot of goliardia and the going back and forth, which is a lot of fun. So let's talk a little bit about Zlatan. Obviously, that was an incredible performance, you know, coming off COVID. Obviously, he played at Inter when Juve went down with Calciopoli. So tell me a little bit, what did you make about Zlatan's performance? And how do you think this is going to be remembered? I mean, we know there's been a lot of heroes of the derby, and this is definitely a performance that's up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Zlatan's performance was astonishing because he scored a brace, of course, but he played all around like a 360 degrees performance from him. Even because he's 39, we know how he's playing right now, but he was a constant danger for Inter defense. And even if even in the last minutes of the game where he was so tired that he can barely move himself. Pioli, the wise Pioli, decided to keep him on the ground, on the field, because if we had replaced him with Colombo, of course, no danger for De Vrij and D'Ambrosio and et cetera, et cetera. So he was perfect for us. Who is denying the impact of Ibrahimovic on this AC Milan is lying, because it's a thing. You can see an AC Milan before Ibrahimovic and an AC Milan after Ibrahimovic. So he was brilliant. Here the thing is that you remember the great performance in derbies if they are really great. Like you remember the 6-0, you remember the comeback of AC Milan from 2-0 to 3-2 with Seedorf and Kaká scoring huge goals. But you remember the derbies depending on the season. Like if we will win the Scudetto, and I don't think we are going to win the Scudetto, you of course remember this performance. But talking in general, it's quite difficult here to be remembered with this performance. But of course, for an AC Milan fans, this is the first derby we won in the last four seasons. So of course, we are going to remember this performance. But talking generally, I don't think so.
So, Daniele, one thing that I was thinking from the derby is that Milan's midfield has improved so much that it's going to be hard for Tonali to break into it. And I don't say this as a criticism of the move. I think this really explains how much Milan has improved in the past few months. So let me ask you this. Are you more surprised that Çalhanoğlu or Kessié have risen to the occasion so much recently? Because I thought Çalhanoğlu has been playing great for a long time. I thought Kessié, that game in the derby was a statement for him. Other than Ibra, he was probably the player that stood out to me the most. And he's been playing this way for a while. So what do you make about these two players? And which two surprised you the most?
Well, the one that surprised me the most, talking generally, not only the derby, is Çalhanoğlu, because we used to know how good could be Frank Kessié from his Atalanta days. And as soon as Pioli decided to let him have just only defensive
responsibility.
Yeah. He wants, like, he improved a lot because he didn't went to the opponent's areas trying to score a goal, but he was just a super and perfect defensive midfielder, and he's playing really good with Ismaël Bennacer on his side. But the one who surprised me the most was Çalhanoğlu, because he was a sort of mystery for us, AC Milan fans, because all the coaches we had, all the trainers we had, decided to put him like in different zone of the field. Like he used to play on the left wing. He used to play as a midfielder, as a mezzala. But finally, with Pioli decided to put him in his natural role, natural zone, like a trequartista, free to move, and he has a beautiful connection with Ibrahimovic, both on the field and outside the field. And I think he's the most surprised man in the 18-11, because he's the key of our success. Like if we see the games that AC Milan played with Pioli, in every single game we have a great performance from one or from both Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Çalhanoğlu, and also of course Kessié and Bennacer, etc. But the keys of AC Milan's success are Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Hakan Çalhanoğlu. So I think the growth of Çalhanoğlu is impressive for us AC Milan fans, and I hope that the AC Milan board will be able to renew the contract that is expiring, I think, the next year with Çalhanoğlu, because he's so relevant for us that he deserves to stay with us, I think.
Okay, so Daniele, you've already hinted at it a little bit. There's a lot of Milan fans that are getting very excited for the season, and for good reason. You know, Juve doesn't look like an unstoppable force like in years past. There's definitely a lot of openings in the league. So where do you think is Milan's ceiling? If you could sign right now for fourth place, would you take it? Or do you think Milan can even finish ahead of that? But if I gave you the option to take fourth place today, would you sign for that right now?
I sign right now with my blood. Right now with my blood. Absolutely. Absolutely. No. Inter are stronger than us. Juventus are stronger than us, Atalanta probably are stronger than us, and also Napoli is maybe at the same level of AC Milan, or maybe a bit better. So I signed today for the fourth place today, because we we need that, we need Champions League, both talking about financial aspects, both talking about my feelings. And, so yes, I think AC Milan will fight for that spot, for the entire season. And, I of course, I hope for Scudetto, but it's a dream. I think that if Pioli will win this Scudetto, this Scudetto could be even more stranger than the one won by Zaccheroni's side, because nobody thought in the 1999 that AC Milan could won the Scudetto, but AC Milan was a strong team back to the days and to those days, and right now it's almost impossible, I think. I hope it, because of course a fan always hope for the best, but again, I will sign today for the full
season. Yeah, today. And I don't blame you. And this isn't a reflection on Milan. There's just really a lot of good teams in Serie A this season. But Daniele, I can't thank you enough. So I always tell people that, because they ask me about podcasts in Italian about calcio. You have one that I adore, Vox to Box. So
thank
tell us
much.
Real fast what you guys are going to cover for the derby and what we can expect in the next few weeks on Vox to Box, which is really outstanding. It's a lot of fun, but also you really gain a lot of knowledge there. Daniele is great, and so are the other hosts. So what can we expect on the pod in the next few weeks?
Thank you very much for your kind words. And finally, we are going to talk about AC Milan, because we didn't tell anything about AC Milan for the first three games, basically because AC Milan played in the same way that used to play in the last season. But of course, we're going to talk about AC Milan. We're going to talk about Juventus, who drew at Crotone. And of course, we're going to talk about everything we found relevant in this Serie A weekend. I want to talk about Gattuso, because Napoli won a great game against Atalanta, with my opinion, the third force of this Serie A right now. So we're going to talk in our way, so with some fun, with some quiz, with some beautiful and a bit weird thing from Marco Maioli and from Giulio Vicenzo. So everything you want to hear about Serie A and funny, but straight away, you can find it on, you could find it on Box to Box.
Well, outstanding. Daniele, thank you so much. It was great to talk to you under such great circumstances for Milan. Thanks for bringing your expertise, and look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you again. Thank you again. It's always a pleasure for me. Thank you.
All right. I'm very excited that Daniele Mazzanti has become somewhat of a regular, and rumors are that I might be on an upcoming episode of Vox to Box's awesome podcast in Italy. And I have to say, it's been a while since I've been nervous doing a show, but that one I might be a little nervous. So now let's get to our patrons. If you guys enjoy Calcioland, I definitely suggest becoming a patron. We have a ton of extra content there, articles, extra interviews. This week we have Napoli Outsider coming back, so everyone on Friday will hear Napoli Outsider specifically on Napoli, but him and I are also going to have a take a deep dive on Serie A. That will be for patrons only. I have to tell you, Napoli's Outsiders appearances to me are worth the subscription in and of itself, but there's a ton of other great stuff there. We have an article coming from Enrico Passarella on how there's a lot more offensive teams in Serie A, which should be interesting. So if you like the way we cover calcio, you know, we try to be a little bit more nuanced, try not to overreact and go in depth, I think you will enjoy being a patron. So you guys know that on Calcioland, we take pride on covering as many teams as possible. It's easy to cover Juve, Inter, Milan, Roma, Napoli, even teams like that. You could do that all the time, but we like to really cover all the teams in Italy as much as possible, as long as we can get a great guest. And I've been wanting to talk about Hellas Verona for quite some time, and we have an outstanding guest today. His first appearance on the show, Richard Hoff, who has a terrific book called Notes from Verona and a terrific website by the same name, which we'll get to. But we're going to talk to him a little bit about Udic's team. Keep in mind, though, we are recording this before the game against Genoa. It's a Monday evening, but before that game in Italy. So a few things may have changed on the team. So, Rick, it's been an absolute pleasure reading your work. I took a deep dive over the weekend, and it's a real pleasure to welcome you to Calcioland. So, benvenuto.
Grazie. Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks. I do appreciate your kind words about my book and my writing. It's a pleasure to speak to you this evening.
Absolutely. So as some listeners know, I grew up in Padova, which isn't far from Verona, about an hour away. Padova's never been a really good football team. We've only been in Serie A once really in my lifetime. Verona has always been very good. When I got into Serie A, they actually won the Scudetto in 86. They kind of had a little bit of a rough stretch, but last season they got back to Serie A. And I have to admit, I really didn't expect much from Verona when they returned to Serie A. They had Juric as manager. He had struggled a little bit. At Genoa, you looked at their squad. There really weren't that many players with a lot of Serie A experience. So let me ask you, were you surprised last year that Verona cruised to the Salvezza without really any time really being in danger of going back to Serie B? Did you expect that?
Yeah, I think you sum up the situation really well, David. And the answer is no. It was completely beyond. What happened last season was completely beyond our expectations. The objective, as you said, was salvation. And even that was a big ask, given what had happened in the previous couple of seasons. The context is we had two really poor seasons. And the atmosphere around the stadium was really pretty toxic. The 2017-18 season with Fabio Pecchia, and we were stuck at the bottom of Serie A for the entire season. And at the end, we were inevitably relegated. The following season, we had a really pretty grim time in Serie B with Fabio Grosso, who turned out to be quite an unpopular coach from the Verona fans' perspective. And in the end, we only really great promotion thanks to a last-minute miraculous playoff campaign. We had a former player from the 80s come in as the caretaker manager, Alfredo Aglietti. And we just had one of those moments. We went into the playoff final. We went 2-0 down in the first leg away to Cittadella. And then we won 3-0 in front of a full Bentigodi to win the final and secure a last-minute promotion up to Serie A. And that final was really, it was a taste of what Verona could be like, what it was like back in the glory days of the 1980s. You mentioned winning the Scudetto in 1985, that was. And we got a wee taste of what that was like. But absolutely right, last season we came into Serie A with really low expectations. Ivan Juric wasn't a name that particularly inspired me at that time. And the players that were brought in, Rahmani, Amrabat, these were guys who were unknown. Veloso, okay, he had a bit of pedigree about him, but the objective was salvation, and most pundits tipped us to go straight back down. So it was a massive surprise and a real pleasure to follow the team last season.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, last season Verona did sell, you mentioned Rahmani and Amrabat. They were sold in January, ended up finishing the season, and it went quite well. So let's talk about Juric, who I have to say, I was kind of expecting him to leave because in my opinion, I was like, I just didn't know what else he really could have really proved at Verona by staying, especially because they did sell a few of his play, of his key players. So let me ask you, yes. A, are you surprised that he stayed? And how would you describe the impact that he's made on the team? Look, a lot of our listeners love Calcio. Maybe some of them haven't watched Verona that much. So what about him do you think he's transmitted to his team so well?
Yeah, okay. Surprised that he stayed. I wasn't particularly surprised, I have to say. I had a sneaky feeling or a hunch that he would stay. Really pleased, in fact, delighted that he stayed, because he'd been so crucial to everything that Verona achieved last season. But I just got a feeling that for him, just the way the season ended last year, there was a kind of sense that there was unfinished business here in Verona. He'd started a project, he'd created this team. Okay, some of the players, in fact, some of the most important players have moved on. But I get the sense with him that, especially after what happened to him at Genoa, where he was sacked three times in the space of a year, I just got the feeling that he would welcome the opportunity to spend a couple of seasons with a team and complete a project, really. If he'd gone at the end of last season, I think it would have been a mistake for him, and a massive mistake for Verona to let him go. Of course, he was in demand, so I think Verona did very well to hang on to him, but he was crucial to what we did. So you asked, what did he bring? Well, I mean, it's well known about Juric that he's a long-standing disciple of Gasperini, and in fact, his career has followed Gasperini from Crotone to Genoa. He got his first experience coaching as number two to Gasperini during Gasperini's time at Inter and at Parma, I think. So his footballing philosophy is very much in the same mould as Gasperini's, which is essentially a direct style of play, an attacking style of play, an offensive style of play. Having said that, for a club like Verona, the crucial thing really is that we make ourselves difficult to beat, that we don't make mistakes, that we don't give away slack goals. And he's particularly in the first half of last season, he was brilliant there. He seems to just have improved the players' levels of concentration. We don't make any mistakes, or very rare mistakes, at the back. And we're difficult to beat, we're difficult to score against. And that basically is what most fans of Verona ask for. You know, we want to compete with the big teams, of course, but more importantly, we just want to be competitive. And so he's also brought stability under Petty and Grosso. They were coaches who tinkered with the systems, tinkered with the players. Never knew from one week to the next who was going to play. Whereas with Grosso, with Juric, you know more or less who's first 11 are going to be, and then it's only if there are injuries or suspensions that he's going to adjust the system. He won't adjust the system, he'll introduce somebody else. So he sticks pretty religiously to his three at the back, four-man midfield, and then three up front. And that seems to have just something that last season with him just seemed to click. So he's a great organiser, a great motivator. Every single player last season overperformed. And these were players who aren't sensational, but decent players who just, every single one of them overperformed last season. And I think that is really what Juric is all about. You know, he brings out the best in players.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. So over the weekend, Juric kind of, I think he was lowering a little bit expectations, saying, look, Verona lost a lot of key players this summer. He used Setien as an example. He arrived from Roma on loan, and saying we can't expect him to be as good as Kumbula overnight in our system. Now, I think Verona, they did bring in a pretty significant amount of talent, maybe more up front compared to the defense, which was maybe the strength of the team last season. So when you look at the transfer window, you think there's enough talent in maybe a different area of the pitch to overcome what were some team strengths last season?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's basically the answer to that question will be, you know, the basis of how we perform this season. You know, has he done enough? Has he brought in enough players? Because there's a massive hole to fill. You know, as you said, we lost Amrabat, we've lost Sakmani, we've lost Kumbula. We also lost out on Borini and Pezina.
Yeah.
And these are five absolute key players for us last season. In particular, Amrabat, who I gather, I haven't seen him play at Fiorentina, but from speaking to people down there, he's not having a great time down there at the moment. And that
I don't think anyone is over there. I don't think anyone is over there.
That's true. But that was the risk for a player like him. You know, he had a great season at Verona and everything just clicked perfectly for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's gone and he's taken a gamble by going somewhere else, and who knows how that is going to work out for him. And, you know, you could say
absolutely.
The same, I don't know, for Kumbula and Rahmani. In Verona, they were key players, top men. They've gone somewhere else. And, you know, they may struggle to get game time. Only time will tell. But, you know, we've lost some big players. There's no escaping that. But we still have the core identity of our team that remains intact. Above all, we've got Juric, but we get Silvestri in goals, who just was called up for the national squad recently.
Yeah.
We've still got the likes of Gunter. We've still got Veloso. We've still got Lazovic and Faroni, who are crucial for us in midfield with their goals and assists. And, you know, there's a familiar look up front with Dicamine and Zaccagni. So there is still the team is still a familiar looking one to us who follow it. And then the players that have been brought in, there's some good signs that there's a certain degree of quality. Guys coming up from Florence and Udinese and, you know, decent Serie A players. And then there's, you know, a couple of, I guess, more high-profile signings for us. I mean, we're never going to be signing, you know, world-class players, but we've got a young guy from Manchester City, Ilic, who we might see tonight against Genoa, and there's Kalinic as well from Atletico Madrid. So these are two exciting players who could make a big difference in an area, especially up front, which was a problem for us last season. You know, we didn't score as much goals as we should have. So we need really a player who can score 15 goals a season. And from what I gather, Kalinic is certainly a player of that caliber.
So, absolutely.
You know,
go ahead.
Some cause for concern with the exodus of players, but we understand that if we get a €20 million offer for a player who we paid €5 million for, then the economic reality is that the club is going to cash in on these guys, and that is the business model of a club like Verona. So unfortunately, we just have to try to move on as best we can.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you, I believe in this Verona team. I think it was all too easy to point to the players that lose, but there are some good ones that stayed. So let's get to them. Obviously, there's Miguel Veloso, who was great in the midfield.
Yeah.
But one thing that really stands out to me is the wing players on Atalanta, because in general, you know, I do my ranking of all the teams at the beginning of the season. There's not that many clubs that have better wing players than Verona right now. So tell me, what do you make of Faraoni and Lazovic? How important are they? And do you think they're underrated to maybe people who don't follow Serie A that closely?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, they were two outstanding players for us last season. And I think, going back to what I was saying about Juric, the system he's playing and his motivational skills, it just seems to have brought out the very best in them. And although they're considered what probably traditionally you might call fullbacks or defensive players, they don't play like that at all under Juric. You play with a three-man back three, and they basically are offensive players. And they've got a license just to rampage up and down the wing. And the quality of what they do is really, really impressive. You know, they attack the box at pace, and they whip the balls in, and they've scored a handful of goals each. So I think underrated, yes. I've noticed, and you've correctly identified them, And I think increasingly people were sitting up and taking notice of these two players and what they brought to Hellas Verona. You know, Faraone scored 5 goals, Lazovic scored 3 goals, Faraone 3 assists and Lazovic 7. And so, you know, for a club like Hellas Verona, really, really good statistics for fullbacks, essentially.
Absolutely.
On Lazovic, he was carrying an injury coming into the start of the season, so he hasn't played much football this season. But we've got Di Marco, who's on loan from Inter, who's come in his place. And he's done a brilliant job as well, more or less doing exactly what Lazovic had been doing for us last season. So Juric has now got a difficult decision whether he brings Lazovic back in or whether he leaves Di Marco on the pitch.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing we want, I suppose. You know, we want a bit of competition and a bit of ability to rotate, and inevitably there are going to be injuries and the COVID as well. You just don't know how the season's going to pan out. So the fact that we've now got 3 players who are really outperforming themselves in that position is great for the club. And as a football fan, you know, I love to see Verona play fluid, fast, direct, attacking football, because, you know, it's not always like that in Verona, I have to tell you. So last season and this season, it is just great to see that kind of quality on the pitch.
Absolutely. And Di Marco and Lazovic, I mean, those guys would be starters on a lot of teams in Serie A. So definitely a good problem to have in that area. Okay, so thanks for giving us an overview there of the team. What we've been doing with guests is it's still early enough in the season that we can do a few over-unders to predict how they'll do. And again, please know, guys, we are recording this before the Genoa game. So let's start with Silvestri, who, as you mentioned, I thought was one of the best keepers in Serie A last season, earned his way to the Italian national team. And last season, Verona had a very good defense. We mentioned Kumbula and Ramani that are no longer there. Last season, Verona had 9.5, but despite the departures, they already have 2 this season. I'm going to set the over-under at 9.5. He has to do better than last season to go over, and that's based on the 2 he already has. So that's 8 more. Do you believe enough in Silvestri and the rest of the Hellas Verona defense to get 8 more clean sheets? And we make them tough here. We make them tough here. So you're not going to get easy ones.
That is tough. I would love to. My heart says they can do it, but my head says that's going to be really tough, especially with the absence of some of our key defenders. I think even tonight against Genoa, we're going to see a bit of a new look defence. So, yeah, I think we'll struggle with that one, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like you'll under. Go under. Yeah, and I think I'll go just
go under.
Next up, and I have to say I'm fascinated by the Kalinic signings, because let's be honest, Kalinic at Milan, even Roma, it's easy to really harp on his limitations more than what he brings to the table. But Kalinic at Fiorentina was a very good Serie A striker, like maybe not a huge high volume goal scorer, but at Verona, you typically don't have that anyway. So last season, he had 5 as a reserve at Roma. I think at Verona, he'll be one of the main guys. So if I set the over-under at 7.5, are you taking the over or the under?
Yeah, I'm going to take the over here. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say he's going to smash it this season.
Ah, I like it.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the main man. And I think Juric will be able to just motivate him, and it's what we're lacking. Actually, we're lacking a 10 or 15 goal a season proven goal scorer, and I'm gonna put my faith in him.
Okay, and I think that's a worthy decision. Next up was the leading scorers last season. Di Carmine had 8. I'm gonna set the over under as if he's gonna have to repeat that. Now, granted, Kalinic is in the mix too,
So do you think Di Carmine is going to live up to last season or better, or will he go under last season's total?
Well, I think, given I went out on a limb for Kalinic, I'm going to say under for Di Carmine, because I think he'll get less game time. He'll be second fiddle to Di Carmine, so I'm going to go under for Di Carmine.
Okay, fair enough. I agree with you there. Okay, was great chatting about your team.
That's
from
good
your
fun.
Town.
That was good fun.
That was great. But now let's get to your website and your book, Notes from Verona. So let's start here. Let's start with your site first. How did you start writing Notes from Verona, and how did that transition into becoming a book? By the way, I've been reading the website over the weekend, some of the book. It's really, really outstanding, guys. So definitely check it out, especially if you love Italy. So tell us how the website started and how it transitioned into the book.
Okay. Well, I relocated my family to Verona from Scotland in September 2011. I did a variety of work when I came over here, mainly teaching English, but I was also looking for an outlet to write. I always enjoyed writing and always had this fantasy about writing a book. So I decided I was going to start blogging, basically about life in Verona. And what happened? The first article I wrote, actually, we were on our summer holidays on a beach in Sardinia. And I was relaxing with my family, sunbathing in August in the beach in Sardinia. And I noticed at one corner of the beach, there was this like bunker covered in vegetation. And it kind of sparked my curiosity a bit. So I wandered over to take a closer look. And I knew from looking at it, I'd studied a bit of history at school and at university. And I'd visited various battlefield sites in France. And so I knew it was a Second World War bunker, but I was no idea what it was doing on this beach in Sardinia. I had no idea really what role Sardinia played during the war, or even for that matter, much about what happened in Italy during the Second World War. So I started to do a little bit of research on that subject, and then I wrote a little article about it. And then I decided just to publish it on this website, notesfromverona.com. And that was a kind of process that repeated itself. I would be wondering about Verona as a between lessons or on a sunny afternoon. And I would just catch a glimpse of something or a building or a monument, or quite often you see these plaques as well on the walls to some event that happened here during the war. But there's never quite a full explanation or a full story. So I started to do a little bit more research, and these stories kept appearing. And I kept writing blogs. So I initially focused on the Italian wartime experience. But then I kind of branched out into different topics. In Italy, it's different, in Verona especially, there's wine and there's football and there's food. So I started to branch out a little bit and just write about day-to-day life in Verona and some of the history and the culture and the football. And then fast forward basically to February, March this year. And obviously Italy is one of the first countries to be hit by the COVID crisis. And at that point, I had a lot of family and friends, and people back home were really curious and concerned to know what was going on in Italy. Italy, as you remember, was really the epicenter for a while, just in terms of the number of deaths.
Absolutely.
The volume of the crisis here. So I decided, just almost spontaneously, just to start writing about what had happened to us and our family just during those first few days of the crisis, just as the lockdown began to kick in. And so I found it really therapeutic and helpful, actually, just to write down and just to put my thoughts down on paper. And I also had this real sense that, in 5 years' time or 10 years' time or 20 years' time, you wouldn't believe what was happening to our family was no different really to what was happening to any other family. It was such a crazy, surreal experience that I just thought I need to write some of this down. And so I posted that on the blog, and the response was actually pretty incredible. I had people, you know, emailing and texting and getting in touch on social media, friends and family and people I hadn't spoke to in 10 or 20 years, just reaching out and saying hello and saying they're thinking of me and saying how they appreciated hearing about what was going on in Italy, you know, because they were obviously concerned about what was going to arrive in the UK or in America or wherever they happened to be next. So that was something that I continued throughout February, March, April, May, June, towards the end of the lockdown. I kept writing more or less. I posted something once or twice a week on different aspects of life in Italy during the lockdown. And I tried, you know, to be honest, and I tried to be optimistic as well, and also just introduce some cultural and historical aspects to the writing as well. So we talk about the history of the city and some of the wine and some of the frustrations about lockdown and kids and, you know, various challenges or even just mundane things like going to the supermarket. And then, to cut a long story short, at the end of all that, towards the end of May, I thought, well, I've got enough material here just to put this in a little book and publish it myself. And, you know, I was very much of the view that even if no one else is interested in reading this, it's something that I personally always treasure, and I'll always be able to look back on those crazy days and remember exactly what happened, and even, you know, to share with my kids as well, because I'm sure one day, who knows, in 20 years or 30 years' time, they're going to ask, you know, Dad, what was it like? What happened? And I'll be able to say, well, here you go. This is my interpretation of it. So that was the story. And, you know, I published it on Amazon, and, you know, it's not going to be a bestseller. But for me, obviously, it's a much more personal project and just something that I felt like the right thing to do at the right time and for the right reasons. So, you know, I'm quite proud of it. And, you know, yeah, my own little contribution to trying to remember what it, and trying to rationalize what it is we've all just been through.
Absolutely. I'm
just hoping there's not going to be a sequel.
Yeah, I hear that. yeah, I was reading some of it over the weekend. I really enjoy it. And, you know, for me, I have a dear friend that lives in Verona. I have a lot of her friends still in Padova. It was really, really well done. You write beautifully. It was really great stuff there. So we'll promote this on the podcast for sure. You guys will have links to the book, and I strongly recommend it. So let's close on this. You love writing about culture, way of life in Italy. I just had lunch before we recorded this. I did have a little bocconcella ripasso, not too much, just a little bit. Yeah, so yeah. Tell a little bit. I think Verona is a very, very underrated destination in Italy. I tell anyone that's going to Venice, you have Verona about an hour and a half away, Padova in the middle. That's like a great, great visit there. So if someone was coming to Verona for the first time and they wanted to have a nice aperitivo, what do you recommend they eat or drink to experience the city for the first time?
Okay, that's a good question. I mean, to eat, first of all, if you're coming to Verona, this is a classic Sunday lunch, which is called terra with bonito. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Bonito is basically just boiled meat. But pera is the Veronese speciality, which is a kind of peppery bread sauce. And the Veronese absolutely love it. And for them, the classic Sunday, it's the classic Sunday lunch that their nonna makes. And so if you happen to be in Verona and you get an afternoon kickoff, go to one of the trattoria, have some pera with bolito, a couple of glasses of Valpolicella, Ripasso, Amarone, or Classico before you go to the game. That's how the Veronese do it. They just love it. In terms of, if you're just wanting something a bit lighter, you know, the classic Aperol Spritz on a sun-drenched piazza is always a winner. But if you're looking for something a little bit different, Afugo is really popular over here now, which is it's similar to an Aperol Spritz, but it's made with Prosecco, but then with elderflower syrup and mint. And it's really refreshing, really, really pretty trendy alternative to the Aperol Spritz, which you see everybody drinking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's become extremely popular. Well, Rick, I can't thank you enough. Go ahead.
I love an Aperol Spritz as well, but if you want something different, try the Hugo.
Yeah, no, I feel like now Aperol Spritz or Campari Spritz, you can find almost anywhere in the world, but Veneto is where it all started. But Rick, I can't thank you enough. This was great. I'm glad we finally covered Verona, gave them their due. Your writing is outstanding. So everyone check out Notes from Verona. We'll send a link to the book. I am already looking forward to your writing on the history of wartime Verona. So thank you so much for being a guest on Calcioland today. I really enjoyed it.
A real pleasure. Thanks. And hopefully we can round the evening off with 3 points for Hellas Verona against Genoa this evening.
There you go. There you go. Rick, thanks so much. I look forward to chatting again with you real soon.
My pleasure.